Every good morning. Welcome to Saturday Morning Tech. And we've been teching this morning already with the webcams, which are not cooperating. If I bring myself up on the webcam, it gets pretty bad. Let me show you what I look like on the webcam. I just suck. There's the difference between cameras for sure. But of course, I got Rob on, and Rob looks great. I think Rob's you've got a bunch of natural light.
I do. I got lots and lots of windows here that make it work.
Yeah, sure. And I've got basically LED 5600K lights, and it's probably I'm sure these cameras are not adjusted for 5600K. They're probably adjusted for standard incandescent light bulbs or something, or CFLs. Yeah. So good morning. How are you?
Doing great. It's good to be here.
Well, what's been happening in the Seattle tech area? Have you had much going on?
Well, it's kind of this weird time of the year where there's stuff going on, but there's also it's pretty slow too. There's a lot of people working on stuff, and the tech news keeps coming out, but there's a lot of people on vacation. I know at specifically where I work, it's definitely this next 2 weeks is going to be a lot of people out. So there's not going to be a lot getting done.
it's kind of the same way here, and I'm trying to get a lot of business done, and everyone's on vacation. Yeah. And it kind of makes it a pain to stay on top of things, but
keep pushing on it until you get into the fall, and then everybody's back to the grind again.
And here it's kind of funny. I'm kind of opposite. I don't necessarily like taking a vacation during the summertime, because in Hawaii the summer's the best, and not that we really have a winter or anything, but
I was gonna say it's pretty much summer there all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But we have a little bit of winter, I guess, per se.
Yeah.
Well, let me. I got some stuff here. And in my stack that I found for us to chat about. And let me bring this down. Have you been watching any of this stuff? I guess I should ask you first off, have you found any cool new shows lately or anything that you're promoting?
I think that, one that I kind of did some work on this past week is the Slate Magazine podcast. That's the one that jumps to mind right now, because I actually was working a lot with them. I mean, they've got some cool podcasts that they do on the audio and video side. And I kind of get a sense, I was talking with quite a few people from the podcast kind of community last week, and I'm getting a sense that there's a resurgence that's going on right now with, listeners and viewers and content providers, that it seems like I think we could very well be coming into a time when the podcast type content, the online web content, could be starting to have a real strong resurgence, right? I mean, I think we kind of spent the last few years a little bit plateaued, I think, but I think it's starting to really kind of boom again.
Well, that's kind of an interesting development then.
Yeah.
Huh.
It seems to be driven by, some popularity, I think, of some big celebrities doing podcasts, like the Kevin Smiths of the world. But it seems like there's really a resurgence of a lot of really powerful celebrities that are getting into it now, that's bringing some attention to it again. And I think that could formulate itself into something significant, I think, over the next couple of years.
And it's kind of interesting too. I think the big news in the podcasting space this past week was the announcement that Wizard is, I guess, reverse a Chinese company, so that they can get into the stock market, and then they're going to be, I don't know, I was reading, they're going to be allowed to acquire 78% of their stock or something. I kind of odd it, that they're doing that, but I guess desperate fellows makes you get in bed with anybody that you can, right?
Yeah. Well, I really hope that they're able to, keep keep the doors open and keep doing what they're doing, because they really do offer a really, really great service for podcasters. So it's, I mean, and there's a lot of really, really big podcasters that are using the Wizard service. And so, you know, and I'm one of them.
Hello.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
Hey, good, hey Michael.
Good. I just,
do you know who I am?
No, I do not.
Oh, well, I stopped in because I've noticed your name's come up before, but I haven't stopped in. My name is Mike Mozart of Jeepers Media on YouTube. I'm one of the most subscribed people on YouTube. I have 400,000 subscribers, and my videos tend to get seen a couple million times. And I'm one of the very few people on YouTube that has the ability to broadcast YouTube live. So I can broadcast live streaming right through YouTube, through my channel, and through the pages called youtube.com/live.
Hey, just so you know, we're live on the net right now, too. So just That's so fine. You know that. Okay.
That's fine. When That's did... even better. Self-promotion time. No,
yeah,
kidding.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
I won't take advantage of it too much, I guess.
Well, what I'm... And, go ahead.
Okay. I didn't mean to interlope on your show. You probably had something going on. Here, go on and do your what you're doing.
No. We were just talking about the whole, you know, net space. I apologize if I'm not bringing myself up on camera. I've got a TriCaster here. So when I basically, when I switch in, I'm bringing myself back on a pro camera. So, if you're not seeing me come front and center, just so you kind of know what's going on. But Rob and I were just kind of chatting how we think that, what he's seen in the, you know, in recent time is, resurgence of new media and podcasting. It's interesting, Rob, you know, and this is a good thing that we've got, Michael on, because so many of the guys that are on YouTube still are not distributing their content through any other channels. They're just using YouTube. You know, I don't know, Michael, if that's your, yeah, if your position, but you know, here we have, you know, you look at this show, we're on all the platforms. We're on Roku, we're on Boxy, we're on Samsung connected TV. So we're on all these different devices, and I put myself up on YouTube, but I get no views. But yet I get, you know, not this specific show, but my primary show, you know, I get a couple hundred thousand downloads for every episode. So what, you know, it's like there's these two worlds that exist, and yet the YouTube guys, in large part, don't put their media up as a podcast. I don't understand why they don't.
Well, actually, we don't have to put ours up for podcasts. If you go to a website like CNET, where they have cnetdownloads.com, the best selling or the best free distributed downloads are free YouTube downloaders. So people can download all of our content for free from YouTube anyway. And I've always have encouraged people to download my content. It's estimated that my videos are being downloaded from YouTube at a pace of almost a million a day.
But the question is, I'm getting paid significant dollars to do my show with advertising. And I know, based upon everything I've talked to YouTubers, unless you're one of the small minority that has a huge show, you don't make nothing. So, you know, do you make enough money to have a full-time living with that type of volume?
Oh my goodness. Let me say that right now I'm probably number 175 most subscribed. Right, so I'm down there on the old totem pole, I should say. And let's say that I'm making 10 times what the average person would be making in America from advertising revenue just from YouTube. And regarding YouTube,
well, from content, just saying from YouTube is nothing, because I've been on YouTube for years and never made a single dime. So, you know, the average person on YouTube makes nothing, you know, so that, you know, that is.
Well, I get a quarter of a million views a day. And I would say, I have another business, and this is part of another business that I do. I design products for a living, particularly toys. And I'm in my office building right now with a quarter of a million toys in it. And let's just say, because we're not supposed to actually discuss publicly how much we make, but let's say that there are at least 1,000 people on YouTube. That's very safe to say there's at least 1,000 YouTube users that have six-figure incomes or higher. There's at least 100 YouTubers that probably have seven-figure incomes or higher. Wow. That's a lot of people. I would say that there must be 5,500 to 10,000 that are making more than $50,000 a year. That's a lot of people. Because I talk to all the YouTube partners. I'm one of the most well-known of the partners. I'm sort of the oldest, wisest one, they sort of call me, and they all come to me with problems. So I'm saying that a lot of people making substantial income. Now, the content on YouTube isn't sequestered there. It isn't like it's only there because YouTube makes content distribution deals. If you go to Meta Cafe, you'll see all of the YouTube content is fully available there. Most of the other video services have complementary content streaming too.
But Michael, with that being said, they can't take that media with them. They can't load that media into their iPhone or their mobile device and walk down the street and listen or watch to you where they can't. I can. Now, I bet you your content on YouTube is relatively short form. You know, I know a lot of people that are doing 60-minute content. You know, my show, my normal show is 70 to 80 minutes. The average YouTube person spends about 3 minutes on YouTube and they bounce, you know, from a video standpoint.
Media standpoint, right now it's 22 minutes of average user time on YouTube per unique user a day.
But that means they're watching 10 videos, right?
Not necessarily. Remember, that's just an average as well. But you have to think too that how many unique viewers they get every day. 150 million unique visitors a day, something that order. I'm not sure what it is now. And I also do long form. Most YouTubers there do long form content. Up until recently, there was a time limit on people of how long you could broadcast for. Ever since I joined YouTube, I never had a broadcast limit since the first day I started on YouTube because I had a director account. That means I was an experienced broadcaster before YouTube even started.
Yeah, me too.
And I still have that director account, which is sort of an old-timey thing.
Right.
I broadcast live shows streaming right through YouTube system where I actually turn on my YouTube Live.
But
I start live.
But Michael, you are one of a handful of people that have been allowed to do that. Rob and I and thousands of others have not been afforded the opportunity to do that. And yet I'm streaming right now. And guess what? No YouTube branding on the page. I have control of my media. There's advantages of being a YouTube Live person. Don't get me wrong. But at the same point, you know, you're one of the very few people that have access to this. YouTube has not made this available to the general public. You know, I want to get Rob the way in here. Rob, you know, some of Michael's points are good, but at the same point, YouTube has been very selective.
Well, the reason YouTube is being very selective is due to copyright problems that could occur.
Well, it's, you know, there's tens of thousands of content creators that don't have copyright issues. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I have to say, I have to give credit to YouTube for creating a platform that is pretty friendly to content folks and offers a lot of things that content providers need, right? And has successfully aggregated large numbers of audience. So I have to say that, you know, from a kind of a person that runs a kind of like an audio video podcast platform, I would have to say that YouTube has been very successful in being a competitor to podcasting. And I think that the content that does very well on YouTube, I think, is sometimes quite different than the content that's successful in podcasting. Though I do think that we're starting to see some similarities starting to surface. And I think it's around comedy and the entertainment side, where podcasts, there are a lot of podcasts that are also being distributed on YouTube that are finding an audience. But I think that most people don't think of a YouTube as a place to go to get serialized content. I think it's a place where people think to go to get one-off types of content. Though I think that may be changing. And I think, you know, Michael, you're an example of that, I think, where you're creating a lot of, serialized content, right? There's like a new episode, you know, constantly being put up there, and you have a subscriber list that comes in and watches your content. And I think that there is this similarity between podcasting and the YouTube side. But I do have to ask the question, though, from a content provider perspective, having all of your content on one branded platform, though it can be, you know, put in other places, I I really wonder if that is a good long-term strategy for you as a content provider to be limiting yourself to one platform. And so I guess that's the question really, I think, at a real fundamental level that Todd is asking, is that there are some examples of podcasters that have gone to YouTube, but have also continued to do the podcasting stuff that are seeing synergies of being in both places. And I think that the only reason that you would not do that would be the cost of bandwidth. So that's I'll throw that back to you at this point and just ask you, I know, is that a consideration that you have in taking your content and putting it in other places besides the YouTube platform, is the cost of actually distributing that outside of that platform?
Well, I don't have to worry about distributing my content because, I said before, my content's very easily downloadable from YouTube due to those YouTube downloaders.
Yeah, and, but I don't believe that very many people download content from YouTube. That's just not how the it's a streaming platform.
Well, you know, I mean, let me just keep going with my explanation.
Sure.
You might find it very interesting.
Sure.
First, instead of criticizing what I'm saying, because remember, I do have a lot of inside knowledge of what's going on there, which
that's great.
Not have.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, go to cnetdownload.com and see they're downloading each week, 7 to 12 million YouTube downloaders, and they have for at least the past 2 years. They've distributed more than 1 billion downloads of software to download videos and material from YouTube just in the past year, a billion worldwide. One in six people in the world have downloaded software to download videos from YouTube. And my videos have been uploaded to every platform in the world. If you do a Google search right now of Jeepers Media, which is my channel name, how many results does it return? 700,000-800,000 hits. I only have 140 videos there. My videos have been freely uploaded to every site around the world. And because I never stop people from doing it, my work has been translated into almost 60 languages around the world.
That's fantastic, though. I have to say.
If you go to Russia, all my videos are there, translated by several different people in several different ways. They're all over China, Japan. My content has springboarded from there. Plus, YouTube does have partner relationships with people such as Metacafe and Daily Motion, where the content is available there. Why do I have to re-upload it there if I'm already getting monetized there by YouTube, who's taking care of it for me? And they monetize YouTube partner content on 60 different platforms around the world. Why would I have to even bother to try to upload to all these different sites?
You don't have to try to upload to those other sites. There's currently today, we're tracking 140 devices that only can consume the media via a download. So essentially, there's no other way. Now we're not counting the iPhone and the iPad because we know those devices can watch YouTube video, but there's 140 devices that people carry in their pockets, they carry around, that is the only way they can get access to the media. That's the only way they can take that media with them. I think the YouTube distribution is great for those that have been able to rise to the top and been able to get exposure. You know, currently I work with 9,000 content creators, and the largest content creators in the space make well over $100,000 a year. Now, the smaller shows, and I'm talking the lower third of the shows, they also make revenue each year. Now, it may not be it may not be thousands of dollars, but it's enough money to pay for their hosting, to take their wife out to dinner. YouTube will never, ever, ever allow or never, ever monetize that lower third of people that are out creating content. Plus, those content creators, even though they may not be world famous and world known, they all have their own .com. They all have control of their media. They all can put their media up on YouTube. They all can be seen on multiple devices, just as you say. But as Rob says, they've leveraged it both ways. So I guess I'm going to throw it back and say, why limit the number of devices that you're saying, well, YouTube's getting me everywhere. I can tell you, YouTube is not getting you everywhere. Because up until today, I've never seen your content. And the only way I would have seen your content, if you would have been in iTunes or if you had been in Zune or some of these other places. So from my perspective, you're losing out on potential revenue. And if you're looking at this at a purely revenues, at a purely revenue based model, you know, you're missing out on potential revenue by not putting your content into these other distribution channels.
I probably could go after even more distribution channels, but I'm making substantial income from it already, as a lot of YouTubers are. Yeah. And everyone that you have that's podcasting original content, anyone that's podcasting or creating original content, particularly if they have a .com website to match it, they just apply to YouTube and they can get a partnership pretty easily if they have substantial quantity of original content plus a standalone website.
Sure.
But the problem is their audience is primarily already getting their content elsewhere. So generally those, we found very, very few people, very few people. It's kind of weird, Rob, isn't it? How you've got people on the YouTube side that are highly successful. Then you've got people on the podcast side that are highly successful, but how come they don't intermix? How come they're not, how come you don't see both? You see very few shows that are a handful that are successful on both sides.
Well, here, I have a question. How many live viewers do you think you have right now?
Running my own private stream. I'd have to bring up Amazon. Generally, on a show like this, because I'm streaming from my... The thing is, what you got to understand is I'm not worried about how many live streamers are watching, because what will happen is when I... Even if it's, let's say it's 100 or 1,000 or 50 sure. or 2, I really don't care what the number is, because when I get done... with this show, it gets packaged up, it gets put in the distribution system. Then over the course of the next week, then there'll be how many subscribers that have subscribed to the show will get the actual download and actually be able to watch it on their own time. So where the YouTube Live is going to give you access to that YouTube Live platform, which is obviously, again, very limited in the number of people they've allowed in there. So I don't have to, YouTube has not invited me. I'm on YouTube. I have a partner account. I've not been invited to do live with YouTube. So what other recourse do I have? I do live the way I want to do live. I put the media up when I'm done. It gets downloaded. And then it gets distributed out into all the channels, including YouTube. But you know, like I said, I get a handful of YouTube views. No one watches my content on YouTube.
Well, just from my experience, I could stream us live right now. I'm not going to, but I could turn on my cam right now and stream us live, just the way we are, stream the actual hangout we're in right now. And I've done it many times. And if I flip on YouTube Live, I can probably get 125 to 150,000 live viewers on YouTube without advertising the show in advance.
But what are you going to get paid for that?
Well, go on, I'll tell you about it.
Yeah.
My live streaming players embed in Google Plus and can be shared across Google Plus. And I have 2.5 million people in my extended circles already on Google Plus. So I can send my player out to 2.5 million people, probably pick up another 500,000 people on Google Plus watching. My players also embed in Facebook. My YouTube Live players embed in Facebook, and I have, you know, 250,000 Facebook fans, 5,000 Facebook friends, and they get spread across Facebook. So if I actually prepare to show in advance, which I try to do every week, I probably can get 2.5 to 5.5 million live viewers, plus the recorded show probably get to be seen at least another million, 500,000 times pretty easily. Plus my content is downloaded off YouTube using those downloaders so freely that I'm probably getting, 2.5 to 3 million downloads a week.
I never hear anybody. I talk to lots of people. I never hear no one talk about those downloaders. Rob, do you hear people that talk about those downloaders?
No, I don't. But I'm actually on that page right now at the CNET site.
Yeah.
And it does show that downloader, the YouTube downloader, has been downloaded 81 million times.
So it's
that's just That's just one. They have over 100 different downloads.
Yeah, I saw that, and each one of those has had multi-millions of downloads. Right. You're exactly right.
They have been downloaded 1.5 billion times in 12 months. Those people that use those downloaders, often there's some of those sites have trackers where they can track exactly what people are downloading. So you get the downloader and actually attach it to a website to say what the most popular downloads are. I can go there and show you my videos are being downloaded 2.7 million times a month minimum.
Yeah.
So I can show you that. And that's old recorded content of mine. You can see other YouTubers, even smaller YouTubers, their content is being freely downloaded.
Quick question then. So you're getting down. All right. We're going to throw the premises out that people are not using those because they are. So let's use the premise certain people are.
Yeah. Yeah,
so let's go at the next presence then and say, do you get paid? The advertising you get from YouTube, do you get paid for those downloads?
No, don't get paid for those downloads, but I allow them to be, I don't care if people download my content because it's a great advertisement for me. That's probably my success on YouTube. I owe almost entirely to me never chasing down copyright violators. I have a lot of people that download.
Why do you keep coming back to copyright violators? You're insinuating that everyone that's creating media is copyright violators.
I never insinuated that at all, and I don't know why you would put a word in my mouth like
no,
that.
No, it's just what you said. It's the way you said it, though. You said you don't have to spend time tracking down copyright.
I don't track down copyright violators because I allow people to freely take the content.
Okay.
Sure.
Gotcha.
That's why my content is so widely distributed across the internet. It's been the best advertisement for me in history.
Yeah.
I have 4 YouTube channels that cumulatively have now 250 million views on my videos.
That's fantastic.
In large part to not going to other websites like Joe Monster in Poland or any of those and filing Digital Millennium Copyright Act type takedown notices to prevent them from distributing the content. That's been the best advertisement I've ever had in history.
Okay, so I guess my point was, is I was just talking about your, by not having a separate distribution channel, by not having it into a format where people can access, I'm just saying it's, I know that you're getting the great promotion and cross promotion. I guess my point is you've got a huge following and really you're leaving money on the table by not monetizing those downloadable content. Now,
I probably could figure ways to download it, but it hasn't been an issue. I literally make so much money from YouTube right now. Plus it isn't even my primary source of income because I do patent research and intellectual property research. I have the largest collection of toys in the world and I design toys and products for a living, which I sell like on QVC and in infomercials. So YouTube's income to me isn't even as important to my career as a lot of the other things I do.
Sure.
And it's becoming such a lot of money right now. I'm actually putting a lot more effort into it. Particularly, you all know about the Panda concept now that's being introduced on YouTube, don't you?
Never heard of it.
A major change. Well, it's been widely advertised and promoted on all of the tech bloggers. Can't write enough about it. If you go to a channel called youtube.com/cosmicpanda, which looks like a normal channel, you click opt-in, and it's a new system of displaying YouTube videos where the content is played in playlist form. People that have opted into Panda, instead of watching YouTube, say, 17 to 22 minutes a day, it's up to 22 minutes for the old format. Now the site's gotten sticky to the point where people will watch it for an hour and a half to 3 hours. And that actually happened 4 months ago. There's been 1,000 articles about it all over the Technoverse. I'm surprised you haven't run into them. And if you look at it, it's a whole different format and it's intended to run on Google TV, but you realize Google TV now built into almost all sold television sets where they can access YouTube instantly right through the family's big screen TV sitting in the living room, which is another huge content distribution point. And again, we all get advertising revenue from that, which has been terrific. You know, I want to drive people to YouTube. It's almost the more I spread my content out across the internet and it's not controlled by YouTube, the more people will not come to my YouTube channel to see the new content. And I count on people coming to my YouTube channel to look at my videos, to watch the brand new content, And that puts it on the charts of YouTube, which gets it seen.
Yeah.
So people land on YouTube. What's the hot videos of the day? And they go through tech or toys or blogging or whatever. And I want to be in the top 25 or 50 videos every day that I put a video up, because people will see it there and they'll subscribe, they'll become fans. Whereas if I did have a website where I put my content up, say, first before I put it on YouTube, or if I distributed it to 50 platforms, then I'll watch it there. So much traffic comes to YouTube to be on their charts really is a giant benefit, huge benefit. And
but you have to admit, though, that of the millions of people that put content up on YouTube, there is a handful, literally a handful, that are earning income from having their videos up there and having the success you are.
Well, 70% or greater now of all the content on YouTube is monetized. YouTube has taken great pains to go through the content.
Never have gotten a single check from YouTube in 5 years.
Well, you also have substantial distribution outside of YouTube that people can find you on.
Yeah.
If you were to have built, instead of doing it in that manner, if you had worked to build up your channel on YouTube rather than the external content, you would have a huge fan base on YouTube. And that fan base, well, let me put it this way. If you asked all of your fans right now, which I could do, but if you asked all your fans to go subscribe to your YouTube channel, like what is your YouTube channel? I could just look it up right now.
It's Geek News, YouTube.com, Geek News. The thing is, they won't, because they consume my content differently. They take my content with them. They take my content in their device with them. They listen to me on a treadmill, or on driving to work in their car, or they watch me on. See, they can listen or watch. I have audio and video. So it's they consume this content differently. That's where I think the YouTubers don't understand how the content's being consumed on the podcast side. I don't know, Rob, am I right or wrong there?
Well, Todd, I think what we could be getting or missing here is that I think podcasting strength is more around audio than it is around video.
True.
First of all, and I think that your shows typically do better on the audio side.
Absolutely.
In a general sense. And what's going on with YouTube has nothing to do with audio shows.
And that's for sure.
So I think what we're really talking about here, I think, most of the biggest success in the podcast area today is around audio. So we may be talking about apples and oranges here in reality. I know that lots of folks on the podcasting side have been trying to get YouTubers to start podcasting. But really, if you look at the numbers of what's going on at YouTube, I totally agree with Michael. I think that clearly, I mean, I'm looking at different networks there that I work with that are considered to be online TV kind of content, mm-hmm. right? They're doing tremendous numbers. And I can totally see why being here makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And plus, also, I think that I
Whoa.
Think of genres of content too, and what types of content are successful at YouTube as opposed to as a video podcast. And I think unfortunately, I think YouTube is kind of stealing the thunder away from video podcasts. I mean, I think that's probably a safe thing to say at this point, just based on what I've seen in the few networks that I've looked on YouTube and the numbers. And it's also amazing to me that content providers want all their numbers shown to everybody too. So, I mean, it's really interesting.
Yeah. I guess, Michael, from my standpoint, if you basically everything's centered around my website. You know, I started as a blogger at geeknewscentral.com and built my audience from that location. And that's where everyone knows to come find me. And that's, that's why, I have a complete online persona, and I have a number of shows that we do over there. And I think that's probably, and again, the show started out audio only for the first 360 episodes. It was audio only content. We build it that way. Then, really, I know I haven't put myself up here on the live section, but I've got a big spot on my head right now because the sun's starting to come through the window. But everyone's going to get a laugh at that. But long story short, you know, who wants to watch Todd for an hour and 20 minutes all the time on video sitting in front of a camera? And, you know, I'm doing news content. I'm not showing stuff. Whereas Michael, your shows, you're showing off gadgets and that kind of stuff, right?
Sure, but there are a lot of people on YouTube that are more talk oriented. You know, like there's a person called Sexy Phil, Philip DeFranco.
Yep.
He mostly speaks like a newscaster would, and he doesn't show any toys and really doesn't show any graphics most of the time. And he is probably the third most subscribed person. He basically is a radio personality that you can happen to see. And there are quite a few actually like that. Michael Buckley is the same way of the What the Buck show. He's probably number 13 most subscribed with 2.5 to 3 million subscribers. It's all based on, they're basically podcasts that you can see.
Yeah.
And they're just graphically a little more interesting, I'd say. And YouTube has been a great platform for people to become recognized and build their off YouTube personas. Yeah. I mean, I've just never focused on trying to get podcasts out there because I think of most podcasts for people listening in their cars or jogging. Yep. And they can't see a screen. So what good is that for me?
Well, that's true. Video, if you're completely video, it's true.
And video advertising pays so much. And the big trend now is people are canceling their cable service because it's too expensive and they're not watching it.
Just on an interesting note point, actually, the audio side on a CPM level pays higher than the video does. Because I know we need advertising deals with vendors all the time. And generally, audio will pay about, well, compared to what YouTube rates are, about four times what YouTube CPM rates are.
YouTube pays a fortune for some of their advertising.
Well, I'm just saying on an average CPM basis, we will get about four times the amount YouTube will get because of the measurement capability and everything else. So I know what YouTube rates pay, but I'm just saying that generally we will do deals that where the CPM rates, the amount of money you get per 1,000 views or listen, pays about four times what YouTube does.
Generally, when you say four times, what is it? Because I don't know what you're using as a base.
Well, let's put it this way: you know, Leo Laporte has publicly spoke. Well, I don't know if he's publicly spoken. I think that in the 70s. So you know, I think that is that's on the high side. The low side probably being in the 25 to 45 range for CPM rates.
I don't know. Just from my experience, a single pre-roll impression without anyone clicking on it, a single pre-roll impression of a 30-second spot. And the pre-rolls only happen on YouTube once every 8 minutes of actual viewing time or actually watching videos, which is much less than consumer television. They can pay as much as a dollar, you know, $1.10, $1.35 for one impression nobody clicks on. A quarter of a million.
Hold on a second. $1.10 per person?
Yeah, per person as far as I know. It's one of those things. Well, I look at my charts and I can't believe how much money I make from the views I get. And I try to figure it out. Huh. And I look at it and think, oh my gosh, I must be getting like $1 per impression.
My understanding is that advertisers are paying about $6 CPM, $4 to $6 CPM to be on YouTube. And that would be $6 per 1,000 views. That's my understanding is about the going rate.
But the pre-rolls are very targeted advertisements, are extremely targeted.
I'll be honest. When I'm on YouTube, I don't see targeted advertising. I see whatever they pop up and show it to me.
Are you signed in when you're actually watching them?
Yeah.
You sign into YouTube when you're actually watching videos?
Yeah.
What kind of videos do you tend to watch on YouTube?
Be honest with you, I watch very few videos on YouTube. I maybe watch one or two videos on YouTube a week, maybe.
Well, if you click browse at the top of YouTube and look at the top videos of the day, look at the quality of advertisements and the pre-rolls that they run on them. And I know that some of those pre-rolls pay a lot because they're very targeted to people that have used this site quite a bit, you know, people that are regular users that watch, you know, 40, 50 videos a day.
Hey, Rob.
They know exactly.
Yeah. Hmm? Hey, Rob, when it comes to advertising on YouTube, what's been your experience?
Really, honestly, I'm not an expert on what's going on there as far as what the rates are and that kind of stuff. So I really can't comment too much on that. But I did Michael, I did go to a site that it looks like that you run called Fail Toys. Is that yours?
What is it? Why?
On YouTube?
Fail Toys is a channel that I started that I never really posted on. My big channel is called Jeepers Media.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, Jeepers Media. That's Fail Toys. Jeepers Media is Fail. Yeah. But yeah. I also own YouTube.com/FailToys, but I hardly posted on that one because people wanted them on Jeepers Media.
So but my is second it G, channel, is it J E P P E R S? Is that how you spell it?
J E E P E R S M E D I A. Jeepers Media.
All right.
YouTube.com/Jeepers Media. But Lon, look at my channel appearance. Your channel on YouTube is plain Jane. It's the default channel that you go to. You never change the colors or add any graphics or anything to it either. It's very flat. I think if you just change the colors and, you know, put an attractive background up, and even if you chose just one of the other default color palettes.
I don't have the ability to put in this big thing on top that says Fail Toys. I have nothing in my channel that will allow me to do that.
All you have to do is just apply for a partnership.
I have a partnership, and I still cannot put up a banner up like you do.
Sure you do. Every partner can do that. It's part of branding.
Mm-mm. There's nothing on mine that allows me to put a banner up like that. I can change colors.
Well, you can. Well, here, do this. Go. Are you on your own channel right now?
I can go there right now.
Go there. I'll tell you how to change it.
Okay. I'm there. Settings.
No, I'm going to have to mute this.
There's a better way to
I got a problem. Place. The pre-rolls aren't mutable for the first 10 seconds.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, go to your channel if you're signed in.
Yep.
And across the top, it says post bulletin, settings, themes and colors, modules, videos and playlists. Mm-hmm. Then the next one should say branding options.
There's nothing there that says branding options.
Then you're not a partner. Partners have a button called branding option. That means that you're not a YouTube partner. You must have that if you're a partner.
Oh, that's I must have a production account. I don't have a partner account.
What you have is probably, I didn't see any advertising running on any of your videos. Can you name a video that you have that you've selected to run advertising on? I can tell if you're a partner.
I've never seen any advertise. I don't have any choices to make advertising available on my content. I've never been offered to make advertising available on my content.
Well, it's always been there. All you have to do is just submit to YouTube. Just submit the partner application. It'll take you a few minutes to fill it out. Say how many videos you have that are original content, right? And fill out the form and submit it. In about 3 to 6 weeks, you'll have a partner channel like I do, and you can put all the banners and hoo-has and everything. You could have done that in 2007, actually.
It's probably the reason they don't want me as a partner is I run advertising within my show, and that's against the YouTube terms of service.
You can. You can be a partner account and run advertising, but you have to tell them. Let me see your ads. Do you do pre-rolls?
I do stuff in the content.
Oh, where you hold up things that you review that you're compensated for example?
No, I don't do that type of stuff. I have actual sponsors that sponsor the show. Citrix, GoToMeeting, GoDaddy, Carbonite, companies like that.
Well, technically, under terms of first service, you can't even do that without YouTube's approval.
Well, then that's probably why YouTube doesn't want my content as a partner. And like I said, that's how I put bread and butter on the table is my sponsors within my content. So, you might not even be able to you'd have to make a separate show and record separate content to even distribute it outside of YouTube because you can't put advertising in your show, can you?
No, you can put advertising in your show if you tell them about it, but you upload these videos after your show is done. Why don't you just edit out the content?
Because the ads are in the content, are part of the content.
I mean,
that's why they get such high CPM rates. It's not like I don't go to a commercial. It's in the live video.
Oh, well, what it mean, like a crawl?
No, it's in the content.
It's embedded in the content itself. It's actually, it's like a host read sponsorship that kind of
stuff. All right, let me.
Can't you just edit out that one little part?
because it won't work because what it does is we're talking like this and say, okay, so we're going to take a break here and we're going to go and talk about GoDaddy for a few minutes. And I would go into a GoDaddy ad and do the GoDaddy part. And then we would come back into the content. If we cut it, it would look odd. It would just be funny. So, and it's not worth my time to cut it because I get paid very well to have the ad in the content.
I'm just saying that if you became a YouTube partner, it's not like they didn't give you or offer you partnership because of that. You need to apply for partnership. They don't just give it to people.
I think I've applied. They've several times I said, do you have a video you want to monetize? Do you want to do that? I've said yes, and then nothing's ever happened. So, again, I don't get enough views probably for me to be on their radar. You know, I get, a couple hundred views on some of the videos. I get no views on YouTube. It's because, like I said, people consume the content differently.
Well, I just think that if you had built up YouTube in 2006, 2007, and done it at the same time as your podcast that you're doing, that would have been, I think it would have been a huge benefit to you with your podcast and everything else. You would have been like Sexy Phil, but that's what the name of the channel is. It's not like S-E-X-Y, it's S-X-E.
Right.
That comes out to that name. He gets about 12 million views a week, probably more than that. And basically all he's doing is what you're doing. Another person, Chris Perillo, is here on YouTube as well. He does extremely well on YouTube. Is a very famous YouTube partner, and yeah, he gets quite a few.
Yeah, Chris doesn't do a podcast either anymore, so it's kind of funny. It is interesting, isn't it, Rob?
But he's been on YouTube since 2000.
I've known Chris for many, many, many years. Yeah, he lives up here in Seattle too.
But he's been on YouTube since 2005. It might tell you something if he abandoned doing podcasts to focus on YouTube. That there must be something substantially beneficial to making a lot of YouTube videos.
Well, we've had him on, believe it or not, we've had him on. I don't know if he's abandoned it, but I think he's been more successful on YouTube than he's been on for a money-making perspective. I know how much money Chris has made in some of his podcasting ventures. I can't say. He's done very well when he's done some stuff, but Chris is all over the place. I think Chris is one of the few guys that is everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And I've also, because of my YouTube channel, I've been offered all sorts of national television exposure. I've been on Bonnie Hunt's show. I've been on the Today Show. I was going to be on Conan's show for the worst Christmas toys of the season, because I usually do the worst toys. And they went and canceled his show. Remember how they canceled it? But I was scheduled to be on Conan. And I have actually been on television all over the world, where people have interviewed me or they've come out here to my offices. Mostly because of my YouTube videos. Sure. The other thing that's important is my material is seen so widely around the world, as well as a lot of other YouTubers. Like, my content is only seen, only about 33% of my content is viewed in North America. You know, there's 65% of my content that's being viewed in England, France, Germany, India, Asia. And it's built up a worldwide audience, a huge worldwide audience that supports me. What I do is I often feature people in my live shows, because I've done live shows on Blog TV for years. Mm-hmm. And I could have recorded those and put them up as podcasts. I just never did. But I could have, let's say if I have 50,000 viewers, I could ask my viewers, hey, I found out about this new guy on YouTube. He's so cool. Would you go check him out and subscribe? And I can get somebody 20 or 30,000 subscribers in a matter of minutes, because my fans are so loyal to me. And I've helped out a lot of smaller channels become very popular because of that.
Yeah, we kind of do the same thing in this space too, is that we do call outs for guys that have started new shows, and you know, some of the same concept works both ways, obviously. Very interesting, for sure.
But when you're actually watching it live on the internet, when you have a large live audience, say on my YouTube live shows that will get 1 million viewers or so, and you ask people to do something, they're already sitting at their computers, and if you put a link right under the view screen they're watching in, they're very liable to click it and do something right then. Whereas you admitted that your podcasts don't have the biggest audiences live, but you have a huge audience of the live recorded ones in iPods later on. But if somebody's on the iPod and you say, hey, would you go check out this channel and subscribe? They may forget it and just not do it. There's nothing like live.
No, not necessarily, because they also get our newsletter, which is delivered to their inbox, which has all the links and everything that we talk about during the show. They have the website that they come to. It's that they're automatically subscribed to, so that they'll get the, you know, they get this, they know when the show is out. It's basically automatically queued to them. So that is one thing that is different. I do have to, and it's, you know, everyone's got their own methodology of when they go look at someone's content and when they don't. But the majority, in like my show specifically, because I do tech, the majority of my content is burned in about 96 hours. And after 96 hours, the content is really not viable anymore because that news is old. So from that perspective, there is a much shorter lifespan. Now, your content, it sounds to me, is more evergreen and it can be watched down the road. And that's obviously a very valuable, and it's a good good thing to have, because there isn't a lot of content creators that are good at creating evergreen content. I think on our side of the fence, we probably see 3-4% of the shows actually have great evergreen content. The majority of the shows have a basically a shelf life of about a week, which is, you know, is probably a discussion point too.
Do you have a Twitter account? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm at Geek News on Twitter. And I'll put a lower third up for those of you that are on, those of you that are up on the, up watching the live stream right now. Mm-hmm. So,
and
go ahead.
Is your website geeknews.com?
No, it's geeknewscentral.com.
Geeknewscentral.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when I registered, there was no Geek News was already taken. So, you know, you take what you can get.
Okay.
So Todd, I'm,
yeah.
Yeah, Todd, I'm actually watching on, you know, a streaming episode on YouTube of the Twit Network.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing there is all of Leo's embedded ads are actually playing just like is played on his podcast.
It's interesting. So they let them do it.
So,
well, they'll let you, but you have to tell them. Remember I said you
have to tell them.
Sure.
And they, what they do is they don't allow, the advertisers have to approve that their ads could appear against that content. So they don't want their advertisers to be upset about it.
So they have, do you have to tell them each time or do you have to tell them just once?
No, you just have to, it's in their system as an algorithm of where to put it. Actually, I'm checking out your Twitter. I'm on Geek Central, geeknewscentral.com on Alexa. You actually get a lot of your viewership from Google, from Google searches.
Maybe about 3-4% of my traffic comes. Well, no more than that. Maybe 10% of my traffic comes from Google. The actual subscriptions to the show actually are not largely Google drove. But the site does, you know, my site probably does 25,000 views a day. So not a high traffic site. But you also got to understand that when people come to the site, they subscribe to the RSS feeds, that orange box in the corner, subscribe to the RSS, subscribe via iTunes, Zune, or whatever it is. And oftentimes they also will get stuff via the newsletter.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. I'm looking at everything that you have that you're doing right now. I'm on your site right now, as a matter of fact. It's a WordPress site.
Yeah. So what I do when I live stream is the video is up on live stream. It's not on live stream. It's up on the main page. And then when we come off, the video gets pulled. The live stream video goes off the front page. So it's only up when we live stream. And then if you basically look down the post, what's going on here? You'll see where the content is from the previous show, where the video is embedded in the base of actually in the blog post of the show. You'll see that. Okay. What am I doing here?
Do you have a Facebook?
I do. It's Facebook Geek News, same as my page on Facebook. But again, a large percentage of the audience is subscribed via iTunes, via subscribe via Zune, via subscribe via an RSS feed. And our primary point that we send people to is geeknewscentral.com. My brand is at Geek News Central. It's not at Facebook. It's not at Twitter. It's not at, someone jumped in, jumped out. It's not at at those locations. We interact with people there, but again, not a major place where we send people to visit the show.
All right, just asking the various questions.
Oh, sure, you know, sure.
This is one from one.tv.
I don't know. How that was that? Weird. Rob, did you were playing Buanas?
Yeah, I'm actually on. Yeah, I'm on YouTube, looking at different stuff. So. All right.
Well, this has been an interesting stopping point for me that I didn't expect. I must
I think it's a really interesting discussion. I mean, I think about what's going on with YouTube a lot, and I see they're being very successful. I have to say,
for sure.
I
mean,
yeah, and plus, don't forget too, Google Television or Google TV is built into most of the brand new TVs and DVR players, that type of material, and YouTube, Google rather, is wiring the country like a cable system, putting in broadband access. And they've gone beyond testing. They've done 6 major metropolitan areas with ultra high speed fiber optics. Mm-hmm. That is like the superior data transmission system. And of course, when you get your Google broadband, you know, you have your Google account and your Google homepage, and where does it bring you? Right to YouTube and the YouTube content.
Yeah.
So that's a big benefit too, and it's really increased viewership, and people are really watching YouTube. They're sticking on the site much longer. And make sure you check out that new Panda format. It's youtube.com/cosmicpanda, and you can opt in and see how they're holding people on the site now for hours and why people are dropping their cable television.
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't had cable television here since January, and I primarily use, I'll tell you how we, what we use to, what I'm seeing from a consumption on our family side. We've got a Roku box, got a Boxy box. We've got a Google TV. Mm-hmm. And what else? Is there anything else? We got an old Vudu box. We hardly ever use that. We watch mostly stuff on Netflix and then channels that we've subscribed to on the devices in a variety of different places. But the only people that really watch anything on YouTube in our household are the kids. But we're getting feedback from somebody. Carinder?
Carinder, we had to mute you because you have feedback to your system.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, we've been off the, I guess, off the pipe, off the cable company pipe for a while now. And it's kind of nice not having to deal with them.
Yeah, and the $100 a month or more for some people.
You like how I call that the pipe, huh, Rob?
Yeah.
Most of the content you care about is free, available online anyway on their own sites.
Right.
If you go to the network sites, it's right there streaming. So why do you need it?
Yeah, and that's what we use the Google TV for, is to go to those variety of sites, and we can watch stuff. Pretty readily.
If you go to CNET Downloads, they offer probably 50 different downloads of watch TV free online downloads, where you download the program into your computer, which you could stream through your TV.
Right.
But basically, every television program that's available, they offer it with this quick and easy little browser. Just look for internet TV as a keyword search; you'll see dozens of them.
Oh yeah, we do that. We use the Xbox as an extender of the.
Don't pay for milk when you can get, don't buy the cow when you can get the milk for free, basically.
So do you know what percentage of your views are actually being viewed on TVs versus the browser interface?
There actually is a breakdown of it. And do you know where most of my views are? Oddly enough, 30% of all my views are through cell phones. 30% of my views are through mobile right now.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, which I didn't expect. That's another reason why I'm exploding. My videos since day one, since the first day I ever started doing videos, my shtick has been, I've been right in the camera with my face. Look at all my videos. Like here, I'll grab a toy that's handy. Here's a handy toy. It's a failed toy I haven't reviewed yet. But I'll go like this. This is Mike Mozart back again, bringing you the coolest products of yesterday and today. Today I have the amazing Superman Justice Jogger. It's an overland villain chaser. Why does Superman need this? He can fly. But you see, I'm right in the camera. It looks good on cell phones.
Yeah.
And even your podcast that you're doing right now, you're sitting back away from the camera and you're showing the studio around you. All of a sudden now, if you're on a little tiny picture, it doesn't look as impressive.
That's
whereas the podcasters or the people I have noticed that have been more successful, like Sexy Phil, are framed more like Bob Greenlee here in the center on the Google Plus Hangout, where their face is more up in there and they're more animated with their hands and stuff.
Yeah.
Like Sexy Phil is. He's very, very popular on YouTube.
You know, and it's kind of funny though, because that's definitely a difference in consumption content. Because, you know, we've tried to do the close up thing and the immediate was roll the camera back. You're too close to me. And this is how they're consuming the content. They're consuming the content. It is kind of interesting, isn't it, Rob?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, I think that the difference between how people perceive video on a phone is different than how they perceive on a 72-inch television.
Right. Yeah,
that whole kind of sit back thing is probably more appropriate for the TV, but it Michael, like you're saying, it definitely makes sense to be more in your face and larger on a smaller screen.
Yeah, in 2007, 2008, YouTube had a different type of rating chart.
Yeah.
Excuse me, and they had a chart that said watch on mobile. Who was the most popular of the day on mobile?
Yeah.
And I was number one on mobile for the day, for the whole system.
That's great.
Because I always planned my videos to be like right here.
Yeah.
And it worked really well on mobile. Then the way to get seen on mobile is that people have a video they want to show to a friend. Hey, John, come here. You've got to see this guy. But think how they hold the video up. They don't hold it up so he can see it. They both sit and watch it.
Yeah.
And if it can be held further away because they're right in the camera, you know, you can actually hold it away and let a group of people see it and enjoy it at the same time.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at some people, like there's a channel called Smosh that does a lot of comedy, mm-hmm. but it's more like I Love Lucy comedy, a lot of pratfalls and lots of props that are used outside. It was never popular at that time, or I don't know how they're doing now, but on cell phones because it's difficult to see.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Smosh has been a video podcaster for many, many years as well. And they've been fairly popular on the video podcasting side. Mm-hmm. So that one is an example of where they went both places.
Yeah. And if you look at their content, a lot of the stuff they have done that I know they've distributed on the internet has been more close up type things. They don't do as much of their pratfall stuff like they do on YouTube.
Yeah.
There's definitely different content going on there. Plus they have the amazing Smosh Pit on their site and they have comedy and they do the most wonderful marketing too by using animated GIFs right now, which you see going by on Google Plus. Well, they'll create a unique GIF and they'll see their name, you know, from Smosh.com.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really good marketers. They really got something going there.
So here's a question for you. Here's a tech question. What are you recording your YouTube videos with? What kind of a camera?
Me? It's a Sony hard drive camera right now. It's a 3CCD camera. As a matter of fact, I have three of them. I'm seeing if there's one on my desk here because I have a whole bunch of toys in here to film later. Until then, I used to use a 3CCD Panasonic. I'm trying to think of the number it was. We had all the same cameras. It's a lot better if you have the same camera. Then if something screws up on one, you're so used to it that everyone here knows how to use them. But the one with the Leica lens on it, because I like the Leica lens on that camera.
What I'm finding is okay, for like, I just need to figure out how to get my cameras into the Hangout because if we flip to me on the Hangout, I got a nice Logitech C615, but it does not like the studio lights. If I'm running a 5600K lighting system for the studio, now it's, you know, and then I flip to, of course, you can't see it because I'm using the TriCaster to switch. But when I go to my studio view, you know, I got this great camera, this great view, nice lighting, and then, and you and both Rob have good lighting on your webcam. So,
I have terrible lighting on my camera today.
It's
awful.
It's well, believe me, it's better than mine, and mine is it's horrible. And
I'm just using the Macintosh built-in EyeSight right now because I didn't expect it when I hang out. This is the default little cheesy built-in one in the iMac.
Yeah, it still looks brand new. Looks good in the Hangout. They've done a pretty good job here in optimizing the video. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's no doubt about that. And the lighting here is very, very poor. I have a lamp on behind me, which isn't ideal.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just the way I happen to be right now because I didn't think I'd be broadcasting any place. What I use is I use a very simple program because I use Macintosh computers here to broadcast with. I use a simple program called ManyCam. Well, I prefer CamTwist. Let me say I use CamTwist more than the others.
Yeah,
because CamTwist allows you so many. I can have 12 external cams hooked up to my computer, and it will recognize each one as a cam source. And you can create the setups and the whole show and the titling and the title slides and roll advertising if you want to put it in. And you can have it all prepared in advance just to go. And you can actually sit at the computer and broadcast by yourself. I could sit here by myself and click cam one, cam two, cam three, and I could show different parts of the room, show different angles of me, do a close-up of toys.
I'm surprised you're not using Wirecast. A lot of the guys that are on Macs are using Wirecast.
No, I have it. I use that for broadcasting real shows. This is just what I'm using to broadcast Hangouts and stuff.
Right.
And I actually use Adobe Studio because YouTube prefers you use Adobe Flash Media Live Encoder, which I use to broadcast to YouTube. So I use the Adobe Studio, which is so easy too.
Now,
CamTwist is free.
So
I recommend it to people.
If you bring up start the stream on, I don't know if you can keep it from coming into the audio, but start the stream that's over at Geek News, and I'll show you my 8 camera views.
Okay, hold on. I'm going over there right now. And you're all set up here right now.
Yeah, I don't know how far the stream might be a little bit behind too, so I don't know how far we're lagging.
I'm at Geek News Central right now. Where do I see your live show? Oh, it's embedded in the top here.
Yeah, just click that play button.
If I click that. Okay, I'll mute it. Just any feedback. I'm sorry. Okay, I got you muted already.
All right.
Okay, I'm watching you right now.
Okay, you got me front and center.
I sure do.
So there's.
Why don't you put,
so let me go ahead and move the camera views.
You should put a counter there because it can show you how many live viewers you are on your page.
Because I'm using a commercial service called LiveStream, so I can bring in a monitor. And then, of course, bringing in a back view, then I can bring in live stream. And if I want to do a pre-roll, I can do that. I can bring in a video roll. Mm-hmm. And then I can bring in an old show. But essentially what I'm using is a TriCaster TCDX 850 is what I have here for the studio. And that's made by New Tech. And if you're looking, if you like to up your production value, you got to talk to those guys. I think you like their products.
What, LiveStream?
No, New Tech's TriCaster.
Well, I have the Wirecast broadcast system here, but I don't use it. I use the Adobe one in favor of it just because, well, YouTube prefers it and it's fine.
Well, I know. I'm streaming to Adobe, right? Using Adobe Flash Media Encoder to stream to Amazon EC2's Flash Media Encoder service. So that's how we're doing the stream today. We're not up on Ustream or LiveStream. We're not getting bombarded with their commercials. We've got a pure, clean video feed.
But I must say that I really like using CamTwist. The only reason I prefer to use it is I have a lot of fans that aren't rich. I have a lot of people that are 18, 20, college students, et cetera. And I'll say if you have a Mac, especially Macs, download CamTwist. It's simple. It's easy. There's no problems using it. And it's a good way to get people into that system. Of course, you're not going to broadcast something on NBC television using it. But for a live stream like we're doing right now, it's perfectly suitable. It's fun. And there's no muss, no fuss. Nobody can work so nice.
It's true. And the best price is it's free. And it's funny how Wirecast and these other guys are coming in charging $1,000, but people don't realize they can do 99% of what they do with Wirecast with the CamTwist. The only thing they can't do, I don't think you can capture video on CamTwist, can you?
Oh, sure you can. I could do it right now. I could capture this whole show instantly.
Oh, so in CamTwist you can do that.
On a Mac.
And it also looks like what the CamTwist product is not available for Windows users.
No, it's either. Mac only.
Windows users can use ManyCam. ManyCam works basically the same way. ManyCam actually has a lot more features, but it's a little more complicated to use, and most of my college students and high school kids that watch my shows particularly use Macs now. That's like the default computer now for the younger crowd, and they make ManyCam for Macintosh as well, but I just prefer CamTwist because it doesn't have all the special effects. As soon as you start throwing in all the special effects, everyone wants to see the effects, and it's very easy to get caught up in them, and special effects tend to make shows look pretty campy and stupid, basically.
Yeah.
Even my YouTube videos, I don't use dissolves. When I edit, it's just cut. I hate all the special effects.
Hey, Tom, I see you just joined us. Have you been watching, or you're just jumping in?
I watch your show on and off, and I've watched Mosey's YouTube videos on the toy stuff, and the other gentleman, unfortunately, I don't know you. I'm so sorry.
Rob is with Zune.
Oh, he's with Zune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Was with Zune or with Zune?
I'm still there.
Oh, it's. I thought they got rid of all the players. Didn't they do that?
Well, Zune is it's more than just media players. It's a whole platform. You know, it's on the Xbox and.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, on the Windows Phone and all that stuff. So.
That's why I thought about Xbox first of all.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's good that you didn't lose your job like all those people with the flip camera.
Oh no!
they said, "Oh, we don't want to do anything with this anymore. See ya."
Yeah, it's a lot bigger platform than just the media players. So,
So are you out in Washington?
Yeah, I'm out in Redmond. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I used to be a authorized Microsoft sales. It's when I had my computer company for a while, but my Uncle Bill got his money every copy of Windows, so he wasn't dumb.
Yeah.
So, Tom, what do you think? What have you thought of the dialogue today? Have you been watching a live stream?
I've not been watching the live stream. I was downstairs. I had a lot of stuff to do. I was up till 3 o'clock doing some panels for Wirecast and doing some editing some video. I got to do a little bit more recording of the intro and everything and get it up on my website. And I slept in a little late. Plus I had some stuff to do down in the garage this morning. So I just turned the computer on. I haven't had a chance.
What is your show?
It's a podcast about amateur radio.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't cool at the same time.
Do you know, are you friends with Mike Dell?
Mike Dell, the guy from Dell Computer?
No, the Mike Dell from Travis City, who's a podcaster that does a couple of ham shows.
No, I don't know of him. I know of, there's a lot of, you know, George Thomas and all them at Amateur Logic.
Yeah,
I know Bob Heil and Gordon West from the from dealing with them when I worked for Ham Radio Outlet. I've dealt with them for a couple of years and did an interview with Bob and Gordon and all that. I know them, but I mean, there's a lot of podcasters. There's a couple guys that do Linux in the Ham Shack.
Yeah,
and one of the guys does a Resonant Frequency. He just sent me a letter, which I'm going to read on my Sunday live show. And because of life and money and everything, he's stopping the blog.
Yeah, I've known
2.5 years or so.
Bob's a great guy. I've known Bob for a while. He's supported us through sending mics and stuff for the podcast awards in years past. So he's a great guy.
Oh, he's. I mean, it's just sitting, talking, listening to him talk for hours. I could just sit there and listen to him for hours. He's just some of the stories are amazing.
Matter of fact, sorry, go ahead.
No, I see it. You got a Heil boom mic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm using the Heil HM12, which is a new mic. He just came out with an Infinity series. And I bought that at the Dayton Ham Fest. And I was going to do a demo on it and put it on my HF radio. But I like the way it sounds. And I left it on the podcast here until I get my PR40. And I'm saving extra money up. I'm gonna have a black one made up with my with the show logo on it, so that's gonna cost a little bit more.
I've got a PR40 back here on the shelf, but I've used it in the past. But you know, sometimes a mic, you almost have to find a mic that you can get married to, and this Blue Mouse has been the best mic by far. I love the PR40, but it does not do my voice any justice per se.
Yeah, there's some people that say that if you got a lower voice, the PR40 is made for it.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not on the low side.
You have a mid-tone voice, so
yep.
You need some that'll either cut out the mid and enhance it. But that's what the EQ's on the mixer for. Most of it, this mic doesn't really have inherent bass like the PR40. So I've got the British EQ boosted up on the bass, and the mids about even, and the highs are just a little bit cranked. So,
well, what we've been talking about this morning is, and it just kind of Mosey hopped in here, and we've been talking about the. And I guess, is that your nickname, Michael? Is it Mosey? Is that how you go by, or what do you have it? Do you go by Michael or what? Oh, we're not hearing you.
I muted my mic so I wouldn't bother people. I was clicking some tabs, and I don't want the clicks to show through. So you have to yeah, I'm known as Mosey.
Okay.
And the reason is that my office, I have six employees. This is my office I'm broadcasting from. 6,000 square foot building full of toys and studios. And they call me Mosey because we have another person that works for me named Michael. So if it's Michael and Michael all the time,
yep.
Like who? So I'm Mosey. And his last name is Scringy, so it's Mosey and Scringy here.
That's funny.
No one ever says the word
Mosey and Scringy. I'm sure that's not a Simpsons cartoon that we watch.
I know. It's so funny that you say that.
So, Tom, what we've been talking about this morning is, you know, as you know, and I didn't know, Mosey's a pretty big guy on YouTube. And then, of course, I do the podcasting side and don't really have any followership over at YouTube. You know, you said you followed him over there. You know, what's your kind of take on the deltas between, you know, guys creating media that's up on, you know, their own websites and guys like Mosey that are doing stuff on YouTube?
Well, I've got one small YouTube channel, which I only put like short 10-minute videos on, like special stuff. I don't have a lot on there. YouTube, Michael has built up over the last... I want to say maybe just in the last 3 months that I've seen, especially after Google Plus hit, I've seen a large increase of followers. And anytime he puts on a hangout, I mean, boom, it's clobbered. It's completely instant.
I can advertise this right now. We'll have people in it within 10 seconds. We'll fill the whole thing up. And there'll be people outside. They're clicking their buttons. And they'll have all these comments underneath it. I couldn't get in. I couldn't get in. I couldn't get in. All like 8,500 comments.
Oh, yeah, he's built up a large following, especially on Google Plus, in just the month it's been running.
Yeah.
And he's got a major pull. His shows are funny as all heck, some of them, especially the flying helicopter one was great.
Yes.
I enjoyed that immensely. I think I'm going to actually order one if Think Geek still has it.
They still have it.
But, yeah, it's just some of the things, some of the toys, you know, it's like you wonder, where were they thinking when they made these? And it's like, It's really good entertainment. And he's got a good following and everything. And, I mean, he is picking up a couple people. Like I think you did a gathering with Ratcliffe.
Yep, I've done.
Now Ratcliffe's got a big following. He's hard to get into his room, but man, if you put you behind
I'm invited
it,
in first.
Yeah, you put you behind it and all your people that you listen. I mean, it's common sense. It's like sales. 1 out of 10 people you hit is going to buy something.
Yeah.
The more people you got, the more you're going to sell. The more people you've got in your circles and you send out a broadcast, you know, 1 out of 10 is going to say, oh, let me go check this out.
And also I've broadcast 2 live shows through YouTube Live, which in the embeddable players here in Google Plus, I've done 2 with Mike. Well, I've done a lot of shows, but I've done 2 with Mike Elgin. You know, everyone knows him. He's a very famous tech blogger, writer, just everything. Mm-hmm. I've done 2 shows now with Trey Ratcliffe, which have been broadcast. Actually, the Trey Ratcliffe one that I did last was seen by possibly as many as 2.5 million viewers. That was one of the biggest ones I've done so far. And I've done one with Trey Ratcliffe again and Robert Scoble.
Yeah.
Is that the right name?
Yeah, I've done Scoble.
Yeah. And you mentioned Mike. When you mentioned Mike Dell here, I thought you were talking about Michael Dell, because Michael Dell is here and he does these live hangouts too on Google Plus, and I've been in hangouts with Michael Dell, which is amazing. And Chris Perillo does the live hangouts and all these people, and I've been brought.
Well, he just sticks his chair there though, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
No, he just leaves his chair there and leaves it broadcast for a while. That's it.
What I think is funny what I think is funny is
he's actually done that a lot, where he just streams an empty room with his.
There's monitor. Actually a website called EmptyChair.com or something like that.
I know just what you're saying. I would say the funniest thing is, and it's so typical, is I noticed last night Daria Pino was broadcasting live. She's a very famous blogger and writer. She's in Huffington Post. She's best friends with, I think, Adrienne Huffington, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, the one from Missouri News Station or something?
Yeah, she's such a wonderful person. And I noticed, wow, look, a hangout. And I went in her hangout, and she didn't even fill it. She only had 5 or 6 people in most the whole time. And she's sitting on her sofa drinking her wine. And her dog's name is Toaster, by the way.
Toaster.
But here's someone that's been circled on this system like 30 or 40,000 times, and they can't fill a hangout so far.
It's the content, dude.
Yeah. But her content is wonderful.
I mean, I've got over 100 and over right now, just not even trying. I've got over 100 people in the ham circle.
Yeah.
And I throw out a hit and maybe I'll get, at the most, I've gotten 6 in there because of timing. Now you double that or triple that or quadruple it, and then you'll get more people in there as you go. But I'm in no rush to do that. But yeah, like you said, I mean, the actually, she had a hangout. If we're thinking of the same person, there's another gentleman on here that does a lot of hangouts, Tony Cruz or something like that. I'm trying to think of his little avatar has a little hat on it. He's facing sideways.
You know, that's,
and he's got a ton of hangouts.
No, that's Roos. It's Tony Roos, I think.
Roos, okay.
R-O-U-S-E. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Not Cruz, Roos, okay.
But I have to say, I just have to add something right now. The people that are here doing live hangouts are Sammy Hagar. The real Sammy Hagar has done many live hangouts. He does them all the time. If you go to Google Plus and just search Sammy Hagar. And I don't know how to say his name right. I better learn it before I do a hangout with him. Joe Satterini,
Satriani.
Satriani, yeah. He does live
hangouts. He does live hangouts?
Yes. Just watch.
His music's really, it's out there, but it's good.
Yeah.
So the question is, when are they going to give us the ability to record these live hangouts right in the app? That's the question. Well, we can do it with our own tools, but you can't do it.
Yeah. I think they're just doing it to avoid copyright problems, and I don't blame them at all. That's why they're so leery about giving out live streaming on YouTube channels, because even professionals make errors, and errors now are very costly errors. And I don't think they want to offer something that allows you to copy right from here that's an official tool of Google. But there are plenty of methods to do it. There's no shortage of ways to capture these streams.
Well, right. you can't record Skype directly. You got to use a third party app if you want to record it.
That's true.
So it's very similar to that. It's like, it could be copyright. It could be they just didn't want to put the option in.
Yeah. Well, but guys,
like you said, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, no. It's, I mean, at an hour and 23 here, and this thing goes up in high def. So we got about 7 minutes before I really, need to shut this down for today. But I guess I wanted to, just kind of bring this back. You know, Rob and I, we jumped on this morning. We had planned on doing, I had a full list of stuff, but Mosey came on and it turned into even a more interesting conversation than I could have imagined. And Mosey, I guess, you know, in what I'm doing here, let me see if I can, let me switch this back, is, you know, when you came on, obviously I had no clue who you were, and thanks for giving us an introduction of what you're doing over at YouTube. I think it's a good perspective and makes me want to go over and take a look and see what I'm doing on YouTube more. And, you know, my challenge too is with everyone on my show being subscribed and they know how they're going to get it, is that I have to push that media pretty quickly up because we're on a timeline. And being here in Honolulu, the bandwidth always isn't the best. So sometimes I get it up on the podcast site, and then I say, well, I'll put it up on YouTube in a couple of days. But and then maybe that's part of their issue with people not watching the content on YouTube, because the time I get up there, it's a couple of days old, and not being evergreen content, it's, you know, it expires pretty quickly. But I don't know.
I hate to interrupt you. Sure. I was going to say something. Why don't you do a separate show that's more evergreen content?
Because I have 9,000 content creators that I have to ensure get a paycheck next month. So I have a regular, you know, you know, I have a regular business. This show pays for, not this show, my main show that I do Monday and Thursday night in Honolulu, which is in the middle of the night for everyone else, keeps my lights on. And this show is kind of a fun show I do every Saturday where I don't have any advertisers in it so that we can just kind of hang out and chat and have fun and not have to worry about making volume per se. And so, you know, I guess that's the perspective. There's only so many hours in a day, but I don't know. Maybe I will have to do something with more evergreen. Think I can handle another show, Rob?
Of course.
Oh, of course. Well, you got plenty of time there, don't you?
Yeah, whatever. So I'm sorry, I cut you off, Mosey. What were you going to say?
No, something that I haven't seen anyone do that I would like to see is there are so many famous tech people that invented important things or important innovations, people that created important patents that changed the world. If you were to interview them about how did you get into doing what you did? How did you develop the whatever it is, maybe the IC circuit that changed photography. Something like that is historical. Things that are historical in nature are very evergreen. People always want to hear, like the History Channel, the history of photography, the history of the pocket. And if you try to, and there are plenty of people that know you, and we all know people, especially even here on Google Plus, that invented important things. Rob Greenlee. You must have some story. You must have been around when they invented Zoom at Microsoft. You could say, that's like an interesting bit of history.
Sure.
And that's very evergreen on YouTube. People love that stuff on YouTube. And it's something I should be doing more of on YouTube.
Yeah.
And if you did a show like that, you could make a show that could get several hundred thousand views over time on YouTube.
Sure.
And I just my suggestion of something that I think you're very talented. I like how you sound. You have a great studio and you have a great following. It could be a good way to build up your YouTube channel. I'd recommend you start a new YouTube channel for the new show.
Right.
You know, keep it separate. But that kind of content, I think, could have a lot of value in history, especially interviewing people. And if you record it live and then edit it afterwards to add in some pictures or something, here's the sample of the little original Zoom player. This isn't. Yeah. So here's one of the original Zoom. I actually have I do prior art research here, and I have probably, over 700 different MP3 players, different ones that have been made in history. Most of them are before 2005, like the early ones, like all the different versions of the Rio players and all those crazy things they offered.
Sure. So you probably, now that you have established yourself, you are, you know, stuff just arrives in the mail. People just send you stuff and you get it and
I don't take anything.
Oh,
nope,
you don't?
I don't accept anything.
Do you buy everything then?
I bought everything. Like the players, I don't buy them new. I buy them on eBay. All over eBay. Who wants an old Rio now?
The
you
toys.
Buy them for pennies, right?
So the
or the original Zooms.
So the toys you cover in your show, you buy everything, huh?
Everything. Look at my toys. I don't do any brand new toys. Look at the toy channel. Do I do any toys that are out on the market now?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen your show, so I need to go watch it.
I don't do anything new because if you accept free things, how can you give an adequate review of it?
Right.
Look, somebody just sent me this $400 toy. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
They sent me a whole case of them back here, you know? And that's what there are a lot of people on YouTube that do that. And I'm not saying it affects their decisions, but I think a lot of people would say it does. And I'm doing a food review show. That's something I've already tested that people love. And I'm not talking to any food companies, manufacturers, not taking any free samples. I'm going to the store and buying the food. And I think people will trust what I give for reviews about that food rather than if they sent me cases of it for free, which they all want to right now. All of them do. Plus, you know, I'm on all the social media, so I have a high clout score, which I have to work on because I've ignored it lately and it's fallen into the 60s, God forfend. And, you know, to have a clout score that's lower than 70 now. You know what the clout is? KLOUT. You know, that big magical company that everyone, including Apple, is using to determine if somebody's important enough to talk to, literally.
Hey, Robert, so,
I think mine's a -4, I think, right now. I'm not sure.
It's got to be at least 10. If you have a Twitter account, even if you don't use it, it's at least a 10.
Oh, okay. Then I'm doing good then. Hey, better than I thought.
Hey, Robert.
So it's clout, not cloud, right? Clout.
It's clout. K-L-O-U-T. Go to clout.
Yeah, I'm on it as well. Sure.
It will tell you what your clout score is, and you can download an extension to Chrome, and it will automatically show your Twitter stream and put everyone's clout score right next to your name. All the big businesses use clout scores now for everything.
Sure.
And it's not the most accurate site, and they're changing it right now. So there's a lot of flaws in the system. That's why my clout score has fallen recently, not because I have fallen. My clout score is going up. It's that they're recalibrating it to include Google+. So they're downgrading other social networks right now for when this goes onto their system in a week or two. Because now I'm spending so much time here, I'm still tweeting a lot. I'm still putting on Facebook a lot. I'm still using Flickr and all those sites and LinkedIn. But
so what's a good clout score then?
You ideally need at least 60. If you fall below 60, it's hard to get anyone to talk to you. In the mid-60s, that means you're someone important enough to talk to. You just don't dismiss people that have clout scores in the 60s. What clout means is how many people you can reach out to and change their opinions. And that's a very important thing. Now, the clout score doesn't show the YouTube clout added to it right now because they're changing their system. That's why it's only showing up in the 60s the last couple of weeks, because they're recalibrating their system. But my clout score has traditionally been 79 to 90 in that range, back and forth. And anyone that has a clout score in the 80s is huge. I mean, companies like Walgreens, like the entire corporation of Walgreens has a clout score of like 54.
It drove me all over the place.
Yeah, and mine right now is 62. If you have a high clout, it's very important that you have a high clout score in this day and age. Because if you send out a tweet, if I sent out a tweet right now, I could do it right now. I could tweet out right now, McDonald's sucks. They cheated me at a local branch. Within 5 minutes, I will have people calling me, texting me on LinkedIn, everywhere from McDonald's. What can we do to make it up to you? Instantly, because they see my clout score is so high and that I reach out to so many tens of thousands of people. I'm what's called an influencer. Anyone with a clout score over 60 is considered a strong influencer. Anyone with a clout score over 70 or 80 means that they're very important and you don't want to screw around with them. And right now it's just an unfortunate time to tell you about clout if you weren't conscious of it, because they're recalibrating their whole system to account for new social networking platforms.
Yeah, I don't know how they figured out, but they said I have a clout score of 45. I have no clue how they got that number. If they just got it from my Twitter feed, then that's,
Go add your, they go by Facebook, Twitter. They go by your YouTube ranking. They go by LinkedIn. Or Square. And you can actually register and confirm the accounts. One of the problems is, say if you're a blogger. Now that's the perfect thing for you to do because you have an RSS feed. It actually tells people how many people are actually subscribed to your feed.
Hmm.
It actually shows up there and adds to your clout score.
I see.
Right. So what happens is right now, due to their rejiggling, my blog has come unlinked from it, and I have to relink my Blogspot blog.
Right.
And what's happening, I would say in the next 2 weeks, I'll have it settled back in. When I get settled back in, my clout score will be up around 88 to 92 again, which is like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie territory. You know, and most people that are probably like the people Norm probably have in the 50s, like 52, 54, maybe 58, 60.
Woohoo, I'm at 17, buddy. Ooh, I just checked
but that's not bad either. You know, it's not nothing.
Yeah, I know.
But
I've seen people post it and I'm like, what is this? And then finally you said, so I go, let me go see what it is. And I just signed in. And
yeah, get the Chrome extension and you'll see how low people's clout scores tend to be. So if you're on Twitter, like I just came to Twitter right now, and I can actually look down every single tweet that goes out or everyone that comes into me, and it'll say 17, 19, 23, 16. And then I see like Friendly's Ice Cream Company is like 51. Then you can really see how much social standing in social media, how much reach you have to people. Mm. And it includes how much people respond.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not just that you have the contents. How many people are responding to it by Twittering your content or responding to your tweets or retweeting you?
Yeah, there's a lot of these types of sites out there. And I know that this is the first time I've seen this specific site. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing scales out. Hey, guys, we are in an hour 34. We can stay on the Hangout and then keep the stream up, but I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording at this point. Rob, I know you jumped in here and we didn't get a chance to chat with you very much,
I've learned a lot, and you know, I've known that these things were going on. It's great to hear, you know, a lot more detail about these things, you know, from folks that are actually doing those things, you know, with YouTube, and it's been a great show. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, me too. And of course, we got Robert Simpson that came in. Robert, sorry we didn't get to chat with you. I don't know how much of this you got to watch, but thanks for jumping in here at the last bit of the show. Any comments as we're getting ready to close out?
Oh, well, we can't hear you. I was watching it on the stream.
Oh.
And what was
can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you stop the recording yet?
No, I didn't.
I was going to wait till you stopped the recording, so I'll
okay.
Hang on.
Okay, all right. So tell Rob, before I shut the stream down, or actually I shut the recording down, tell them where your website is.
Well, I can be found, you know, all of the typical places, Twitter, at Rob Greenlee. And then I've got a couple websites that you can go visit, robgreenlee.com and webtalkradio.com. And then you can go check out zooninsider.com too. There's another place where you can see what's going on with Zune anyway.
And Robert, how about you?
I'm, at spitballs.com and then, on Google Plus,
very cool.
I did the shared circle for the photographers because the photographers of Google Plus is pretty good for the photographers for sharing their pictures in their stream. I like the way it handles them.
And Tom, where can they find you?
You can find all the information about my podcast and everything at hqaradio.com.
Very cool. And of course, Mosey, they can find you on Jeepers. Is that correctly how it is? Jeepers? Just tell us.
Go to YouTube and look for Jeepers Media, JEEPERSMEDIA. And my second channel, which has just as many views as the first one, is called The Toy Channel, all as one word. So it's youtube.com/Jeepers Media, youtube.com/The Toy Channel. I'm Jeepers Media on Twitter. And here on Google Plus, I'm Michael Mozart, all spelled out, and I have lots of fun, crazy, fail toys, the worst toys ever made. That's my specialty.
That's great.
Well, everyone, thanks for hanging out. Please stay hanging out. I'm just going to shut the stream down. But, of course, those of you who have been watching the Saturday Morning Tech Show, we definitely talked new media today. We didn't talk a lot of tech, but I hope you enjoyed it. It's been good. And, of course, you can email me at geeknews@gmail.com and call our hotline at 619-342-7365. Leave your comments. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Geek News as well. But thanks. We'll see you next Saturday on the Saturday Morning Hangout. Take care. Aloha.